imbibing his morning tea beneath his pink silken quilt, Bernard decided he must marry Ethel with no more delay. "I love the girl," he said to himself, "and she must be mine. But I somehow feel I cannot propose to her in London. It would not be seemly in the city of London. We must go for a day in the country, and when surrounded by the gay twittering of the birds and the smell of the cows, I will lay my suit at her feet." And he waved his arm wildly at the thought. Then he sprang from bed and gave a rat-tat at Ethel's door. "Are you up, my dear?" he called. "Well, not quite," said Ethel, hastily jumping from her downy nest. "Be quick," cried Bernard. "I have a plan to spend a day near Windsor Castle, and we will take our lunch and spend a happy day." "Oh, hurrah!" shouted Ethel. "I shall soon be ready," and she put on a new white muslin dress in a fit of high spirits. She looked very beautiful, with some red roses in her hat, and the dainty red rouge in her cheeks looked quite the thing. Bernard heaved a sigh, and his eyes flashed as he beheld her, and Ethel thought to herself what a fine type of manhood he represented, with his nice thin legs in pale brown trousers and well-fitting spats, and a red rose in his buttonhole, and rather a sporting cap, which gave him a great air with its quaint check and little flaps to pull down if necessary. Off they started, the envy of all the waiters. They arrived at Windsor very hot from the journey, and Bernard at once hired a boat to row his beloved up the river. Ethel could not row, but she much enjoyed seeing the tough, sunburnt arms of Bernard tugging at the oars as she lay among the rich cushions on the dainty boat. She had a rather lazy nature, but Bernard did not know of this. However, he soon got dog-tired and suggested lunch by the mossy bank. "Oh, yes," said Ethel, quickly opening the sparkling champagne. "Don't spill any," cried Bernard, as he carved some chicken. They eat and drank deeply of the charming viands, ending up with meringues and chocolates. "Let us now bask under the spreading trees," said Bernard in a passionate tone. "Oh, yes, let's," said Ethel, and she opened her dainty parasol and sank down upon the long green grass. She closed her eyes, but she was far from asleep. Bernard sat down in profound silence, gazing at her pink face and long wavy eyelashes. Then he edged a trifle closer to Ethel's form. "Ethel," he murmured in a trembly voice. "Oh, what is it?" said Ethel, hastily sitting up. "Words fail me," ejaculated Bernard hoarsely. "My passion for you is intense," he added fervently. "It has grown day and night since I first beheld you." "Oh," said Ethel in surprise. "I am not prepared for this," and she leant back against the trunk of the tree. Bernard placed one arm tightly round her. "When will you marry me, Ethel?" he uttered. "You must be my wife. It has come to that I love you so intensely that if you say no, I shall perforce dash my body to the brink of yon muddy river," he panted wildly. "Oh, don't do that," implored Ethel, breathing rather hard. "Then say you love me," he cried. "Oh, Bernard," she sighed fervently, "I certainly love you madly. You are to me like a heathen god," she cried, looking at his manly form and handsome flashing face. "I will indeed marry you." "How soon?" gasped Bernard, gazing at her intensely. "As soon as possible," said Ethel, gently closing her eyes. "My darling," whispered Bernard, and he seized her in his arms. "We will be married next week." "Oh, Bernard," muttered Ethel, "this is so sudden." "No, no," cried Bernard, and taking the bull by both horns, he kissed her violently on her dainty face. "My bride-to-be," he murmured several times. Ethel trembled with joy as she heard the mystic words. "Oh, Bernard," she said, "little did I ever dream of such as this." And she suddenly fainted into his outstretched arms. "Oh, I say," gasped Bernard, and laying the dainty burden on the grass, he dashed to the water's edge and got a cupful of the fragrant river to pour on his true love's pallid brow. She soon came to and looked up with a sickly smile. "Take me back to the Gaiety Hotel," she whispered faintly. "With pleasure, my darling," said Bernard. "I will just pack up our viands ere I unloose the boat." Ethel felt better after a few drops of champagne and began to tidy her hair while Bernard packed the remains of the food. Then, arm in arm, they tottered to the boat. I trust you have not got an illness, my darling, murmured Bernard as he helped her in. Oh, no, I am very strong, said Ethel. I fainted from joy, she added to explain matters. Oh, I see, said Bernard, handing her a cushion. Well, some people do, he added kindly. And so saying, they rode down the dark stream, now flowing silently beneath a golden moon. The next few days were indeed busy for Ethel and Bernard. First of all, Ethel got some dainty pink notepaper with silver crest on it and sent out invitations in the following terms to all their friends. Miss Ethel Montague will be married to Mr. Bernard Clark at Westminster Abbey on June the 10th. Your company is requested there at 2:30 sharp and afterwards for refreshment at the Gaiety Hotel, RSVP. Having posted heaps of these and got several replies, Ethel began to order her wedding dress, which cost a good bit. She chose a rich satin with a humped pattern of gold on the pure white, and it had a long train edged with arum lilies. Her bouquet she ordered to be of white dog daisies, St. Joseph lilies, and orange blossoms, tied up with pale blue satin ribbon. "You will indeed be a charming spectacle, my darling," gasped Bernard as they left the shop. Then they drove to the tailor, where Bernard ordered an elegant black suit with coat-tails lined with crimson satin, a pale lavender tie, and an opera hat of the same hue. They both ordered a lot of new clothes besides, and Bernard gave Ethel a huge tiara made of rubies and diamonds, also two rich bracelets, and Ethel gave him a brand new trunk of shiny green leather. Ethel's parents were too poor to come so far, but her mother sent her a gold watch which did not go but had been some years in the family, and her father provided a cheque for £2 and promised to send her a darling little baby calf when ready. Ethel got speedily into her bed for the last time at the dear old Gaiety and shed a few salt tears thinking of her past life. But she quickly cheered up and began to plan about how many children she would have. The abbey was indeed thronged next day when Ethel and Bernard cantered up in a very fine carriage drawn by two prancing steeds who foamed a good deal. In the porch stood several clean altar boys who conducted the lucky pair up the aisle while the organ pealed a merry blast. The mighty edifice was packed, and seated in the front row was the Earl of Clincham, looking very brisk as he was going to give Ethel away at the correct moment. Beside him sat Mr. Saltina, all in black, and looking bitterly sad as he ground his teeth as Ethel came marching up. There were some merry hymns, and as soon as Ethel and Bernard were won, the clergyman began a sermon about Adam and Eve and the serpent, and Mr. Saltina cried into his large handkerchief, and the Earl kept on nudging him as his sniffs were rather loud. Then the wedding march pealed forth, and down the church stepped Ethel and Bernard as husband and wife. Into the cab they got, and speedily dashed off to the Gaiety. The wedding refreshments were indeed a treat to all, and even Mr. Saltina cheered up when he beheld the wedding cake and sparkling wines. Then the Earl got up and made a very fine speech about marriage vows and bliss, and he quoted several good bits from the Bible which got a lot of applause. Bernard replied in good round terms. "I thank your lordship for those kind remarks," he said in clear tones. "I expect we shall be as happy as a lark, and I hope you will all be ditto some day." "Hear, hear," muttered a stray lady in the crowd, and down sat Bernard while Ethel went up to change her wedding garment for a choice pink velvet dress with a golden girdle and a very chic toque. Bernard also put on a new suit of blue stripe and some silk socks and clean underclothing. "Hurrah! Hurrah!" shouted the guests as the pair reappeared in the aforesaid get-ups. Then everybody got a bag of rice and sprinkled on the pair, and Mr. Saltina sadly threw a white tennis shoe at them, wiping his eyes the while. Off drove the happy pair, and the guests finished up the food. The happy pair went to Egypt for their honeymoon, as they thought it would be a nice warm spot, and they had never seen the wondrous land. Ethel was a bit sick on the boat, but Bernard braved the storm in manly style. However, Ethel had recovered by the time they got to Egypt, and here we will leave them for a merry 6 weeks of bliss while we return to England. Mr. Saltina, by the aid of the Earl and the kindness of the Prince of Wales, managed to get the job his soul craved, and any day might be seen in Hyde Park or Piccadilly galloping madly after the royal carriage in a smart suit of green velvet with knickerbockers complete. The Earl continued his merry life at the compartments till he finally fell in love with one of the noble ladies who haunted them. She was not so pretty as Ethel, and she had rather a bulgy figure and brown eyes. But she had lovely raven tresses, a pointed nose, and a rose-like complexion of a dainty hue. She had very nice feet and plenty of money. Her name was called Lady Helena Herring, and her age was 25, and she mated well with the Earl. Mr. Saltina grew very lonely after the Earl was married, and he could not bear a single life any more. So, feigning Ethel, he married one of the maids in waiting at Buckingham Palace, by name Bessie Top, a pleasant girl of 18, with a round red face and rather starry eyes. So now that all our friends are married, I will add a few words about their families. Ethel and Bernard returned from their honeymoon with a son and heir, a nice fat baby called Ignatius Bernard. They soon had 6 more children, 4 boys and 3 girls, and some of them were twins, which was very exciting. The Earl only got 2 rather sickly girls called Helen and Marie, because the last one looked slightly French. Mr. Saltina had a large family of 10, 5 of each. But he grew very morose as the years rolled by, and his little cottage was very noisy, and his wife was a bit annoying at times, especially when he took to dreaming of Ethel and wishing he could have married her. Still, he was a pious man in his way, and found relief in prayer. Bernard Clark was the happiest of our friends, as he loved Ethel to the bitter end, and so did she him, and they had a nice house, too. The Earl soon got tired of his sickly daughters, and his wife had a savage temper, so he thought he would divorce her and try again. But he gave up the idea after several attempts, and decided to offer it up as a mortification. So now, my readers, we will say farewell to the characters in this book.